this is Olivia, and you're listening to Bikini Drive-In on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. I'm joined today by Sarah. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back.
Yeah.
Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Our knowledge and experience will hopefully provide you with access points to feminist theory, art history, and film critique while using horror and science fiction genres as a set of discourse. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning and listener discretion is advised. And spoilers ahead. This week, we are discussing Clive Barker's 1990 film, Nightbreed.
Who's buried in Midian?
Ain't nothing but dead folk.
Somewhere, hidden from sight, closer than you might think, is a place that's not on any map. Midian.
Something's breeding there.
It looks a lot like hell. But they call it home.
There goes the neighborhood.
They're not pretty. They're not neighborly.
Y'all come back now! You hear?
They're not even human. But this time, they're the good guys. From the imagination of Clive Barker comes Nightbreed.
You can't go down there!
They have only one enemy. A beast called man, sworn to destroy the Nightbreed.
Sounds like we're going head to head with the devil himself.
And only one chance. A man.
Boone!
Called Boone.
It's time to fight!
Chance that we got.
They're armed.
So am I.
Out of your deepest fears and your darkest fantasies, Clive Barker brings you a startling new breed of adventure.
I won't let you down.
Nightbreed. At last, the night has a hero.
Outstanding.
Aaron Boone is haunted by terrifying nightmares of a city of monsters. He goes to see a psychiatrist, Dr. Decker, to help, but what Boone doesn't know is that Decker is really a serial killer. Decker frames Boone for his murders, and Boone is killed by the police. Boone is then brought back to life by the monsters of his dreams, the Nightbreed, who in turn join Boone in his quest to stop Decker from killing again. Sarah, what's your history with Nightbreed?
Oh, I love this movie so much. My history with Nightbreed is more of a history with Clive Barker overall. I read a lot of the stuff that he's written. My first sort of foray into Clive Barker was through the Books of Blood, which I bought when I was really young, probably too young. He's just like a super prolific writer. So I've read The Great and Secret Show, Weave World, and Imagica. He writes young adult fiction as well. So I own a first edition signed hardcover of The Thief of Always. So like, I'm just a little bit of a fan.
Big fan. Yeah,
big fan. Yeah. I remember seeing this movie and thinking it was like super weird and super great because it's like, to me, it's this really like the mystical, magical realism in a movie form, which is something that like I am all about. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to my friends, and this was like elementary, like no, oh, like yes. junior high. I was like not that there yet, but I think it was like I was super young, and they were just like, oh, okay, weirdo. But I did find a couple quotes that Clive Barker said about this movie. So the first one is essentially, I think the books about the clash between the 19th century and 20th century monsters, the 20th century monster is perfectly embodied by the psychotic soulless serial killer. When I talk about the 19th century monsters, I think I use them without a trace of the pejorative. The world-weary vampire and the shapeshifter are figures that have shamanistic powers. They are images that are associated with the demoniacal because we give them that place in society. I'm not entirely convinced that they would be considered monsters in any healthy society. They would be seen as an extension of our appetite, extensions of what is fantastical and extraordinary. And I think that quote as a whole just like is Clive Barker's brain.
Yeah.
When I was reading that, I was like, oh yeah, totally. Because like all of his books have like some element of good and bad, but it's not the like, this person is good, mm-hmm. this person is bad. It's like, no, the person who's bad maybe isn't bad, but like, or maybe they are, but like, let's look at it.
Yeah, and he gives them, there's a reason why. Yeah.
Totally. And he gives them much more like agency, and he gives them like much more of a rich story than like this person who slashed this person is bad. And then another quote that he has is, one of the things I wanted to do with the book was to set up, and so the book is called Cabal. So one of the things I wanted to do with the book was to set up a classic stalk and slash psycho, the 20th century monster on the loose, Dekker, mm-hmm. against the historical, mythological, and fairy tale version of the monster, which is what Boone and the Nightbreed are. I have not moral but aesthetic problems with Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees and so on, and the notion that these characters are the stuff of which anti-heroes can be made strikes me as both morally dubious and also not very interesting. Which is lovely. He's like, this is basic.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, look, this isn't really very attractive. Do we actually like these people? Not only Dekker, but the quote-unquote normal human beings who make up the lynch mm-hmm. mob? Do we really prefer these machismo-spouting bastards to the strange and mysterious and the extraordinary? It's a very it's very convenient that in Aliens, the strange and the mysterious and the extraordinary just happens to be all-devouring mm-hmm. and actually very ugly.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot going on mm-hmm. always in his books and mm-hmm. in his movies and stuff, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have any history with Clive Barker or Nightbreed. Jill... another host of Bikini Drive-In, and I saw Hellraiser at the Park Theater last year and covered it for the show, but that's really the only Clive Barker film I've seen. Nightbreed has been on my watch list for a while because it's on so many queer horror lists, and you and I had a long conversation about on Barker the last time we recorded, so that made me like really excited to watch and research mm-hmm. Nightbreed. I love the colors of the mm-hmm. film. It's very like comic book-like. I love the production design and yeah. makeup effects, yeah. and I love David Cronenberg in this movie.
Yes, he's perfect.
And I love his, like, murder office.
Yes.
That design is so...
Yeah, it's perfect.
And, like, creepy. And
yeah.
Great.
And it's also, like, he's a psychiatrist, so it's, like, mm-hmm. the sterile, like...
Yeah.
And it's, like, his dead, sterile eyes as well. And just yeah. how he, like, moves so unfeeling. It's, like, that office is, like, the physical embodiment of... him.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I feel like Danny Elfman's score gives the film a magical fairy tale mm-hmm. Horror themed like family film quality, like mm-hmm. Neverending Story or Monster Squad, which confession until very recently I thought Nightbreed and Monster Squad are the same movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like maybe the marketing or like the posters just look yeah. kind of similar and
yeah.
yeah, again, like that sort of comic book feel.
Well, in the like the intro like that we listened to, it mm-hmm. was very like there goes the neighborhood, like yeah. actually literally said that. And it's just like when you watch the movie, and like if I was to watch yeah. a movie based on the trailer, I'd be like, what is this?
Yeah,
because it was very like studio-esque.
Totally,
like
yeah,
they had to like be like, but this time the good guys aren't who you normally think that they are.
Yeah, so kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, oh, okay, we're getting like clubbed over the head with yeah. like obviousness.
Totally. When it actually like the plot is actually very melodramatic.
Oh, so
and a little convoluted, like very similar to Hellraiser. Mm-hmm. It's just like there's a lot of story, there's a lot of mythology, mm-hmm. and it's a bit melodramatic, which I don't always like.
Oh no.
Also, doesn't Boone look exactly like David Boreanaz?
Yes, he's like the poor man's or Canadian. He's the Canadian David Boreanaz. Yeah. I just, yeah. And like, I think, like you said, with the movie being like really melodramatic and like that there's so much going on, mm-hmm. like, I read another quote where Clive Barker was like planning on like a Hellraiser 2 and mm-hmm. a Hellraiser 3. And like all
what
of his.
Nightbreed?
Yeah, sorry. Yes, there is a Hellraiser 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And 15 like and 87.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, Nightbreed 2 and 3. And it's like that, like all of his books, like, so Clive Barker writes these like just sprawling, like all of his books before Cabal were like 700 pages. Mm-hmm. And they were series within themselves. And so it's like, this was the first book that he wrote that was like a novella. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, he can't get all of his ideas into like one book.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it, I think, like so hard to sort of distill down into yes. a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like the movie, super beautiful. Like there's a lot of things that I think it got wrong in like studio relations.
Yeah, studio relations, and it's 1990.
Exactly. But there's like so many things that I think it got right. Like it's beautiful. Like the mm-hmm. set design, all of the Nightbreed are incredible.
Yeah.
And the score by Danny Elfman is amazing. And yeah, it's just one of those things, like, I wonder what, like, how much of that is just, like, how much of the sort of things that didn't go right were the fact that it was the 90s.
Yeah.
And, like, if it was the relationship between the studio and Clive Barker, because, like, there's, like, three versions of this movie now. Yeah. Like, there was the theatrical release, there was the director's cut, and there was another one, and apparently there's, like, another one coming out that's, like, 3 hours long.
Oh, my gosh.
Where it's just, like, basically, like, everything. Like, they just were like, let's just all put it into one thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wonder how much of, like, the failings of the movie are the failings of, like, just studio stuff.
Totally. And so did the studio, they didn't want the Nightbreed to seem like the good guys. They wanted them to be, like, purely bad guys.
So yeah.
I feel like that's where the maybe discrepancy between.
Totally. I think it's hard for, like, a mainstream studio and, like, mainstream every, like, people who consume movies to think about the good guys being not human.
Yeah. Or, yeah, the or, guys, like, not being, like, yeah, 100% good or uncomplicated.
Yeah. Or, yeah, like, just, like, the bad guys are, like, the cops.
Yeah.
And, like, the priest.
Yeah.
And, like, all that stuff. The things that we're, like, no, society tells us these are the good people. It's, like, take a knee on that one. Yeah. And Nightbreed's going to show you why.
Yeah, exactly. Can you explain to me, or any listeners who haven't read Clive Barker, what the Books of Blood are, and does the novella Cabal differ from the film?
So the Books of Blood are a collection of short stories. There's 6 in total in 2 volumes that were published in the late 80s. Cabal is a standalone book, but in doing research, I learned that some of the stories from the 6th volume of the Books of Blood, so, like, there's 3 stories in each, were part of or were in Cabal. But I also read that Cabal was the first, quote-unquote, short story that he had written.
It's only 400 pages.
Yeah, it's only 400 pages as opposed to, like, 700. And it's, like, those tiny, like, it's that those, like, when you think about, like a pulp, like, novel.
Like a V.C. Andrews?
Small, yes, it's a V.C. Andrews. Like, it's that size and tiny print that's, like, smudged and the paint. Like, it's just a quintessential, like, 90s feeling book.
Yeah.
But yeah, like his, so this was, he said that this was the shortest, the first time that he had written a novella because he had just come off of, I think Weave World was the last book that he wrote, and that was over 700 pages. And so this one, I think it was like 350 or something. Oh no, yeah, Great and Secret Show, that was 650. So that he was like, this is the first novella I've written. But like, and so it's just like, it gets a little convoluted in that. It's difficult, I think, for him to distill everything down into one.
Into like a 2-hour
movie. Into a 2-hour, yeah, into like, yeah. And even in like a book, because he had, like I had said previously, planned to write other books.
Mm-hmm.
And this translation of like book to movie in this style is like, the studio had huge issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why there's like 3 different issues, like 3 different versions of this film. And why, like, it sort of like has widely known that there was a lot like that it just didn't turn out the way that Clive Barker wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that the version that I saw was the, like, it was like 2 hours long. So I think that was the director's cut one, which included a lot of stuff that wasn't in the original one. I think that's the one that you saw too.
I think the one I saw was only like an hour and a half.
Okay.
So it's probably missing stuff. It's just why I'm like, this is convoluted. It's like, oh, there's probably like major scenes that are cut.
Yeah, but I don't think that like in watching it, I don't think they had the additions of like the extra scenes really. Like the one that I saw has like, there's a lot more about the characters of Midian. Like when Lori like goes down into Midian and there's like, she sees all the things happening that are just like, sweet Lord, wow, there's a lot of weird stuff happening here. And she's just like this like, doe-eyed, like, oh.
Calgary girl.
Yeah, Calgary girl. Calgary lounge singer.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, yeah, that's the,
awesome.
Yeah.
Great.
Hello, I'm Clive Barker, the writer and director of Nightbreed. Media Home Entertainment have kindly given me a few minutes to introduce the world of the breed to you, and I never turn down an invitation to talk about the dark. I've always loved monsters. I think there's a corner of all of us that envies their powers, but would love to live forever, or to fly, or to change shape at will. So, when I came to make a movie about monsters,
I wanted to create a world we'd feel strangely at home in. I've called it Midian, an underground city peopled with creatures from our darkest fantasies. Things that feed on blood, things that avoid the light of day, things repulsive and fascinating. Forbidden souls, hiding from their cruelest enemy, man. In making Midian a reality, I've had the genius of some great creators at my side. The special effects people of Image Animation, who designed the terrors of the Hellraiser movies for me. Danny Elfman, whose magnificent scores you'll remember from Beetlejuice and Batman. And a wonderful collection of actors, one of whom may come as a surprise to you. David Cronenberg, who plays Dr. Decker in Nightbreed, is the director of such horror classics as Scanners, The Fly, and Dead Ringers. I asked him to join the cast, and he delighted me by agreeing, bringing his own subtle style of chill to our story. All of us, behind the camera and in front, had the same intention, to make Nightbreed a film like no other, flipping all the conventions of the horror movie, plunging you into a world of insanity and miracles, where dead men can be heroes and monsters beautiful. Where the only place of refuge is the most forbidden place on earth, Midian, the home of the Nightbreed. I hope the breed will remain with you, as they remain with me. After all, we all need a few friends to get us through the night.
Who would have thought,
nerd,
that that guy would have made a super melodramatic movie? So Clive Barker is gay, and his queerness, just like his queerness, is everywhere, mm-hmm. which is like really refreshing to read at any time, but also when you're like a wee tot reading something like in I can't remember what book it was. It was either like The Great and Secret Show or Weave World. There's like a non-binary character, mm-hmm. and it's just like, yeah, it's cool. They don't like
that's
without
just who they are.
Yeah, there's no explanation or anything because like it was the 80s.
Yeah.
But in this movie specifically, I really noticed a lack of the male gaze that is so often. Like, there's no, like, the virgin doesn't die. You know,
and Laurie's
like,
wearing a very bulky sweater.
Yeah, Laurie's wearing the bulkiest, most, like, unsightly, like, sweater of life. But, like, Boone's, like, in his tighty-whities most of the time.
Love it.
Which is just like, yeah, let's see more of this.
Yeah.
So it was, it's just, like, a really refreshing thing. To see a horror film, because like another quote that I found was taught the word, like, and I couldn't find it, like I found it once and was like, of course I can't find it again, was Clive Barker talking about how like horror and gore and all that is like the last vestige of basically an opportunity for male directors to be super crappy to their female characters. And he's just kind of like, that's boring. And like, let's not do that. Like, let's create worlds in which like the female characters have agency or are have stories or are interesting. And that's something that in this in this movie I found comes out a lot. Like, they're like, everybody's pretty equal in terms of like in Midian, like with the breed, like there doesn't really seem to be much division of like, oh, you're a hero because of this, like you're, you know, kind of thing. And it just, yeah, it's just really interesting to see that play out like in a major motion picture.
Totally. So I have a quote here from bloodydisgusting.com talking about Nightbreed. The narrative itself is filled to the brim with queerness that serves as an allegory for intolerance. Can anyone watch Nightbreed and not automatically associate the titular characters with queer people? They've been outcast by society and are deemed as dangerous by the normal people. The climax of the film culminates in an assault on the Nightbreed's home base of Midian, as the normies would rather kill all of them as opposed to understand them. So yes, I do agree that like horror does have issues with like portraying violence against women and treating female characters like very shitty as disposable. But also horror has always been about queerness and otherness. And it's like, I think feel still like the site of transgressive political stories as well as sci-fi. While horror bros still exist and co-opt genres and
bros,
that's horror bros.
Any bros. Good. Just the worst.
Yeah. So, yeah. So these horror texts were based on gothic novels written by women and queer writers. And they talk about otherness, identifying and being the other. So, for example, we have the universal monsters such as Dracula, Frankenstein, represented otherness and sort of gained audience sympathy. Like, they don't win, unfortunately, in the end, but they are the sympathetic sort of tragic characters. And then this is sort of related to the final battle scene as the normies attack mm-hmm. Midian. Mm-hmm. I found it was like very much like Nazi imagery.
Yeah.
It's just like this militarized force.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, vigilante group going in.
Yeah.
And the normies are seen as the bad guys and monsters are persecuted. For more info on queer horror, please listen to Gay Lords of Darkness.
Yeah.
It's a great podcast.
It is a great podcast.
Yeah. And they...
And they do real... They dig into it.
They dig into it and they... Yeah.
And I also just thought that it was interesting. Just the, you know, like, as melodramatic and as glaringly obvious as this movie is, it is really sort of refreshing to see how, like, the head cop guy that gets called in at the end is just, like, the worst.
The worst. Like, he's, worst like, macho, gross.
Yeah. Like, man. With everything. And then, like, it's just, like, I think it almost, like, serves, like, if it were to be subtle, it wouldn't have served same, like, good purpose it did as to be able to be like, oh no, like this guy, there is no question that he is actually the worst.
He's bad.
Like he's just, you know, and then like with the priest and stuff, there's like a little like,
there's a bit of a queer reading or
there's like a, you know, like he's fallen and like, it's a little bit weird. And then like he ends up, you know, he gets turned weird because he looks at Baphomet and, and then the like head police guy like is like, oh well, they like join forces. So it's like this weirdness of like he only becomes acceptable when he's like go like the queerish priest only becomes acceptable when he's like trying to go after the
when they have like a and, shared like,
find
enemy.
Them yes
yeah
and that's like the only way that's like, you know, the like it's sort of just like a big like overarching topic of like you can only understand something like when you have a shared thing and that there's like a lack of empathy and all that. What I found interesting about this movie as well is that the female characters had agency, like as it's, you know, pretty infrequent in a lot of horror films. But they had mostly agency. Like they, like Laurie goes after Boone and it's just like, I mean like, the part of it that's annoying to me about this is that it's like, this is my boyfriend and I'm going to do everything to like save him and he's going to be with me and I love him so much and stuff, when she should be like, boy, bye. Like, you're doing your thing. I'm going to continue
you might be
being.
A murderer.
Yeah, like, you might be a murderer. I'm pretty sure you're not, but like, something weird's going on. Yeah. I'm going to let you sort yourself out. I'm going to continue my like lounge singing career and maybe we'll meet up again.
Yeah.
But she's just like, no, I'm going to find him. And she just like goes to like all of these crazy measures and lengths to do it and like is in charge of herself the whole time.
Yeah.
And like, there's a, like the quintessential, like lady bonding bathroom scene.
Cheryl Ann.
Yeah. Cheryl Ann. Love her. And like Cheryl Ann is like, I'm at a bar and I'm looking my best and like, maybe I'll find somebody tonight. Yeah. And there's like no shame in, I mean like RIP Cheryl Ann, but like, not
but
her
you're
fault.
Still like,
but
it's you're upsetting like, when she dies.
Oh yeah.
It's
you're
not,
like,
it's not
oh,
to
no.
play for laughs. Yeah.
And she was never like shamed for, you know, being like, oh, I'm going to try and find myself somebody that's to the
She's
nice.
Like, no, I'll come help you find your boyfriend.
Yeah, she's like, hey, we just met in the bathroom. Let me go on this, like, weird journey with you.
Yeah.
I'm just going to, like, get some first and then we'll meet up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then, like, in terms of, like, the Nightbreed themselves, there's, like, a lot of, like, really powerful and that don't necessarily always, like, that use their sexuality, but also, like, don't use their sexuality. Like, I mean, there's, like, the super sexy porcupine one that's, like, touching and, you know, whatever. And then the guys are like, ooh. And I was like, she's literally, like, a porcupine with, like, a slit for a nose.
Yeah.
But, like, cool. And then...
It's like, don't you hate her?
Yeah, she's, like, what you don't want. But because she's like, oh, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
They're like, all right, cool.
They're weak.
Yeah, they're weak, dumb men.
Normies, yeah.
Yeah, weak, dumb, normie men. And like the mom of the like little girl who's the, you know, and she like can go through people, which is just like so cool.
Yeah.
But she's also just like a wise, you know, part of the like upper crust of the Nightbreed.
Seems. Totally. She's like part of their government.
yeah. With like Lylesburg, which like that name, I'm sorry, is just like, I was like, really? Lylesburg? You're the like leader dude?
Yeah.
Your name is Lyle. You just added Berg on the end because you're like, I want to be fancy.
Your name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree that Laurie is a compelling protagonist and the investigating force in the movie. It's like we're following her sort of investigating, meeting, because she...
Like, it's through her thing that we get to see all of this.
Totally. But yeah, her character is totally undermined at the end as she stabs herself to make Moon bite her. And it seems like really a weird choice that was totally like out of character for
her. I hated that part so much.
Yeah. And just like more Sherilyn. But that part was like, it worked. It was like creepy and upsetting and...
Oh, when Sherilyn... Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. And as for Porcupine Lady... or what's her name? Shuna Sassy.
Okay.
I just started reading Dead Blondes and Bad Brothers by Sadie Doyle, which is so great. She writes about how men were so afraid of female sexual agency that they either pathologized women, deemed them hysterical, or saw them as monsters. So Porcupine Lady represents this sort of sexualized female monster and uses her sexuality to seduce the normies before killing them, which is a very 90s trope, I think, because we don't really learn very much about her.
No.
Other than she, like, looks cool and is sexy.
Yeah.
I do, however, like her Little Red Riding Hood outfit. And then the flip where, like, she's also, like, the prey and the predator.
Yeah. I do, too. And, like, it's one of those things that I feel a little weird about where I'm like, you don't need to use your sexuality for things. But, like, if you're going to...
For survival.
Yeah, exactly. That's a thing, too, where it's like, oh, like, you're, like... And then the fact that she is almost, like... like a wild animal in that way is like also into it. Like just
I just love
so
it.
Many levels. Yeah. This is just like the most onion of a movie.
Yeah.
Just so many layers.
Most onion. So that's our show this week. Thanks so much for listening. Sarah, thanks so much for coming back.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're welcome
me.
Back anytime. Oh,
I love nerding out about all this stuff. And like, I'm like, oh, I get to talk about Clive Barker.
Yes,
like,
yes, please. So you can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM. Or CKUW.ca. We have a Facebook page.
Instagram.
Right? Post about it. Yeah.
It's on the thing.
It's around.
Yeah. You'll find it.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Our frequency celebrates diversity.